Hello, thank you for joining me. This is episode 13 of The Sleep, the healthy podcast titled Baby Sleep. I'm Dennis Trumpy, and my goal is to help improve your sleep for your better health and well-being. When you get married, start a business, or become a parent, despite your planning and analyzing, the fact is, you don't have a clue of what you're getting yourself into. Out of these life-changing endeavors, the one that likely has the most impact on sleep is having a baby. I'm writing this introduction in Toronto, where I'm visiting my daughter, who is our firstborn. It's been almost 40 years since bringing her home from the hospital, and I still vividly remember the experience. She was quickly followed with siblings, and I trace my first experience of chronic insomnia back to the days when multiple young children meant multiple nighttime awakenings, which created a habit of waking during the night. That habit carries through to this day. Besides the motive of caregivers sleeping better, much of a young child's development is occurring during sleep. If you are guardians or guardians-to-be of young children, I would like you to avoid developing insomnia while at the same time helping with your child's healthy development and improving the quality of time you spend together. That is a win-win-win combination. And that is why today we are going to have the helpful talk with Susie Giordano, author of 12 Hours Sleep by 12 Weeks Old, a step-by-step plan for baby sleep success. If you are caring for young children, know anyone else who does, or you or somebody you know is hoping to have your own family someday, you should definitely listen to today's show. Susie Giordano is known as the Baby Coach and is author of 12 Hours Sleep by 12 Weeks Old and The Baby Sleep Solution. She is a child sleep consultant based in Washington, D.C. and New York. Susie, welcome to our show.
Welcome, Dennis. So good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I would first like to take you back to your early beginnings with babies and sleep, back to when you lived in Brazil. Can you tell us that story?
Yes. Just like you, I still have those years of sleep deprivation very etched into my my memories. You know, they come to me very often, actually on a daily basis, because I do work with sleep and babies. Back in Brazil, you know, as a culture, moms don't have that much help, even from husbands. And so I pretty much, made all that what I know now are mistakes when it comes to my own children. You know, I was 26 years old with three kids under the age of seven. And when I found out that I was pregnant with twins, 27 years of age with five kids, very sleep deprived. It was, was actually a very scary and dark place in my life, because I really was out of my depth back then. I was, like many of the parents that I work with now, in a place where all the very best intentioned people in my life that, I knew loved me were giving very different opinions about how to better raise my children. But at the end of the day, when they were crying and at the night, everybody would go to their homes, and I found myself alone, awake all night with twin boys and with my other children as well, and expected to fully function the next day. And it was through an advice from my father, after me crashing into sleep at their home on a weekend, he told me, he's like, listen, you have got to figure this out in a way that works for you, not anybody else, because at the end of the day, you are the one dealing with this. So what I learned, which was one of the most important lessons in my life, sometimes from the darkest moment in your life, you are actually being exposed to a challenge that if you take upon that challenge, you will become the best version of yourself. You will find all your answers. They won't come easy, but once you find them, it will require you to transform yourself into the absolute, you know, into a better vision, and a better version of yourself. And that's what happened with me. And I found out that I put myself actually in a very rigid pattern. It's like, listen, you know, I stepped back and I allowed my twins, because there were two babies that required my help. So I couldn't, you know, favor one over the other. So pretty quickly, they learned to be patient, waiting for their turn to eat. And then, you know, I was one that was very good sleeper and the other one not so good. So I expected the not so good one to follow the steps of the very good one. So if the very good one was sleeping 3 hours, like, okay, you have to sleep 3 hours too. I would help a little bit when they met my not so good sleeper. Cried, because as a personality, I'm the kind of mother that cannot let my children just cry it out. You know, I have to kind of have some kind of a participation into trying to self-soothe them. You know, I want them to do it, but I don't want them to just to abandon them. That was my thought back then in their crib. And to my surprise, is they start going 4 hours. And then they start going, you know, 5 hours and 6 hours. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And I kept pushing that boundary, you know, for survival mode. And because I saw they were so much better, you know, so much happier. And to make a long story short, you know, I was able to get my boys to sleep through the night by the time they were 12 weeks, which I thought, okay, I stumble upon this. This is sleep training. Or raising an independent sleeper came to me out of struggle, out of necessity. But once I knew, oh, hey, my 3-month-old can do this, so can my 3-year-old, you know, and my 5-year-old and my 7-year-old. So I actually became the mother that is like, no, you know, these kids need to learn this. They need to learn how to play independently, how to go to sleep without help, and all of that in a level of expectations that suited me. Not my mom, who would say, just put them there and let them figure it out. Or my mother-in-law that said, oh, you have to hold the baby. So so I had to find my own middle ground to survival. And little did I know that transformation will carry me into a whole new career when I came to the United States, and to a whole new purpose and way of life that I could never have expected.
I love that phrase you used of raising an independent sleeper. You have a very interesting business where you go into people's homes with their young babies and do the sleep training on site. How exactly does that work?
Usually what happens is we come in, the purpose of coming in and people that come to us, they're, you know, we are their last hope, is the last frontier. It's like, okay, if this woman can't get this figured out, it means my baby can't sleep. So they all come with that, you know, thinking that, my baby can't do it. There's something wrong with my baby. So we, and that's, I have to find my way where, you know, because I've been working with children for the last 29 years under all kinds of, you know, circumstances that are, you know, that alone, you know, like autism, Down syndrome, cleft palate, heart problems, you know, severe digestive problems. And so time has given me the opportunity, has placed me in situations that, you know, the babies have all the reasons not to be able to sleep, and yet they do. And that was part of my journey to understand that every child can do it. So what we do, we usually come in. When we began our business, we were more like overnight care. So we would come home to a people's home, and from the moment they came from the hospital, and we would go through the whole process that now I lay out on our book. And we'd actually, you know, do the sleep training, weaning off the feeding, swaddling, and human interaction extension, and then we'll do the whole process. Right now, we're more focused on sleep training, which comes to older kids where all the bad habits has set. But because sleep is a primary need, you can reset a child, because the child is actually, they're very malleable. They're very, you know, their habits have not set in, just like you said. You know, it's a prolonged exposure of the same behavior that becomes so detrimental over time. Like you said, you got used to the sleep deprivation of raising your own children, because that's what makes us the strongest species, because we adapt. Human beings are adaptable. They're creatures of habit. One of the reasons that I'm so passionate about what I do is children at any age can be redirected into finding their own abilities. And once they do, that makes so much easier for them to navigate at optimum pace their childhood, where, you know, they're developing physically, emotionally, intellectually. And unfortunately, our culture have you know, created this thought that, you know, sleep is disposable. But anyways, going back to our services, we go in to a family's home. We stay there for 5 nights. Our goal is to eliminate any feedings, anything that's getting in the way of that baby sleep, you know, the optimal amount of time for them to sleep, give them the opportunity to develop the ability to go to sleep, stay asleep, and wake up happy, equip the parents by answering all their questions and making them understand, okay, the benefits of sleep, and then how it, because it's a basic need, how easy it is to consistently get them, reset them into what's best for them, age appropriate, because as they get older, you know, their needs change as far as naps, as far as how long they sleep at night. So parents have, so kids are a moving target. But once parents understand the process, then it makes it much easier to understand their place as the people in charge and what the expectation can be depending on the child's age. So we come, I always like to say, we bring them through the worst of the storm, which is overcoming all those habits that, you know, weren't beneficial for sleep, the children's sleep and the parents' sleep, and get the whole family back into a better rhythm, and then equip the parents and the caretakers, you know, how to manage and develop a schedule of eating and naps and overnight sleep that is most beneficial for the child.
That's great. Besides the guardians and the baby sleeping better, what are some of the daytime benefits of 12 hours sleep, such as the parents' decision-making abilities and the children's behavior?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I have found in my own experience, you know, by working directly, doing my own personal research with children, and that now the majority, if not the whole medical community, are all coming to the same understanding and the same conclusion, is sleep is a primary need. I believe we have only started to scratch the surface of the importance of sleep. Human beings as a species, they function in two cycles, the cycle of light and dark, the circadian rhythm, okay? So we are a biological machine that reboots every night. They're rebooting where, you know, you're not functioning, your eyes are closed, so information is not coming in. So all the body is doing in a dormant stage is, you know, working in a cellular level. Like you said, you know, all the restoration, growth, development, filing of information, retention of information, all happens when you are at that dormant stage. If you interrupt or diminish, decrease the amount of the rebooting time, something is compromised. Okay. So now they're finding out like lack of sleep for people that, let's say, work at night, like myself, or, you know, healthcare providers, people that gets off that circadian rhythm, that rhythm of sleep. That there is a long-term consequence for that when it comes to the brain's health, like Alzheimer's and, you know, and many diabetes, many diseases now have been linked to long-term sleep deprivation or a sleep interrupted sleep or no sleep. So, and like I said, I believe in my personal experience that we're just scratching the surface of understanding how deeply affected we are. Can we survive in a little amount of sleep? Absolutely. It's just like, you know, you can survive in just hamburgers, but long term, there will be a consequence for not, you know, not making the best choices when it comes to sleep. And once we live in a society, like I mentioned before, that sees sleeping as a luxury, or they look at sleep as something that can be compromised on. And it's my job, you know, and of many people that work with sleep, like you're doing, you're educating people on the importance of sleep. How is that going to affect you? I always mention to the families I work, a rested parent, it's a better parent. It's more engaged. It's more willing to play, willing to, or able to perform better as a parent. A rested baby is a better baby, is an easier baby to manage. It's a more, because sleep affects you emotionally, physically, intellectually. Okay. All of those aspects of a human being are affected by no sleep or interrupted sleep. And that's where I find that parents have, they find difficulty into partnering that understanding, because they read about it, how sleep is important, but they are supposed to, and there's that pressure on society that you know, you have to be available for your baby. You have to wear your baby. You have to sleep with your baby. You can't, you know, you have to be, you have to function 24 hours if you want to be a good parent, you know? And I think that's the myth that by educating people, by going out there and talking to them, I hope in time we take out of the equation. So parents understand when they look at sleep is more in a rational way and less of an emotional way. So they understand, okay, this is what's best for my child physically, emotionally, and intellectually. This is what's best for me physically, emotionally, and intellectually. When we look at sleep in a more rational, practical way, I think we're going to have a society that it's better functioning, it's happier, healthier, emotionally, physically, intellectually.
This show will only become as good as the feedback I receive from you. Yes, I do mean you. If you want this show to become more and more focused on giving you value, please send me your constructive criticism and compliments. Go to sleepthehealthy.com, where you can choose between phone number, email address, and feedback form. Thank you for choosing to take the time to support this free podcast. Yeah, it strikes me that we put, you know, unrealistically high demands on the parents. And in the case of sleep, as you say, if you live up to those demands, you can actually do harm as well as good. But you mentioned in the book that non-sleeping time, just quiet times with the child by themselves but not sleeping, are also good for the child. Why do you say that?
Yes, because which is for me, the families I have the privilege to work with, I'd always tell them, it breaks my heart to tell you this. Your baby is a gift you don't get to keep. In you is entrusted to give this baby the best tools emotionally, physically, intellectually, spiritually, so they can go and live their lives. It's inevitable that they're going to grow and become adults. So you're actually raising adults. Okay. So every day when you wake up, you have an opportunity to teach a little lesson. This is a long-term gig, you know? So once sleep is out of the way, okay, my baby is sleeping through the night. My baby knows how to have, you know, scheduled naps, prioritize. But at some point, I tell parents, you have to give them the opportunity to learn how to entertain themselves, how to be self-sufficient, how to be, you know, they don't need to be entertained and engaged by somebody else all the time, okay? Because if you are hanging on to your baby every minute of the day, that's the lesson. You need somebody engaging with you, entertaining you, occupying you for you to be happy, you know? Now, if you expose your baby to, it's like, okay, I'm going to let him entertain himself for a few minutes. I'm going to step away because the lesson I want him to have is that sometimes you play with people, sometimes you play by yourself. You know, you exposing them to the choice of, you know, self-satisfaction in a way, it's like, I'm enough. You know, I can sit here and read a book and do something that I like. Why? Because when you are by yourself, when a child is by themselves, they're going to choose to do what they like to do. So they're actually going to have to go within, you know, and give in to who they really are, you know. So if you step away, you know, you might give, let's say, if I'm playing with a baby, oh, look at this truck, which is something that called my attention, okay? If you are a step back, his attention is going to go to something that he chose, not me. You know, if I'm giving to the baby, it's like, okay, I'm choosing what you're looking into. If they are by themselves, they're going to find that way. Their imagination will kick in. There, you know, it's all about what you expose your child to. And what I'm trying to plant a little seed is like, what if you allow this next generation of adults to be more emotionally independent, you know? Because I believe, Dennis, life is about balance. Parent is not black, is not white, is gray. It's not about being, you know, wearing your baby. You know, I need to be with my baby, make sure my baby is happy all the time. But it's not just completely ignoring your baby either. It's somewhere in the middle where I give my baby attention and then I allow my baby to develop their own abilities to entertain, to be curious, to explore, to imagine, and you know, to allow him to allow them to become who are they are meant to be. Parents should have. I think when you do too much for your baby, you become too important. You know, you become you're like competing for the star role, where in reality the parent is a supportive role. You know, the star is the baby. You're just, you know, got them from that very young stage so you can give the best tools that you can. You teach them the best lessons you have learned that you find are important to you. But at the same time, you find that balance where you allow your baby the room to grow and figure it out his own lesson. You help them find their own happy place.
Yeah, this past weekend, we had our one-year-old grandson overnight, And at one point, I actually laid down on the bed and just kind of watched him in his crib. And he had no problem entertaining himself in all sorts of different ways. And I kept in mind, you know, the lessons I learned from your book and tried putting that into practice. But, you know, I could feel the resistance from my established habits and my beliefs getting in the way with implementing them. So what are some of the myths and negative stereotypes attached with sleep training babies and toddlers?
Well, the main one, I think, is that sleep training is directly connected with cry it out. You have to let your baby just cry it out. Put them there and let them figure it out. So that just letting your baby cry without, you know, with the sole purpose of getting them to sleep doesn't go well with mothers, which if we mothers had a way, and fathers as well, babies will come out of the womb smiling, not crying. They would be happy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the rest of their lives. We can't get our way. Actually, crying is their only way of communicating from the get-go, right? From the when they come out of the womb, they come out of the womb crying. Okay, so but crying, it goes against a mother in a instinctual level. Women, if we hear a baby crying, we have to help. Okay, now what I want to tell parents is like we have to make peace with crying. We have to make peace with challenge. We have to make peace. Why? Because that's growth. You don't grow by staying put. You grow by moving, by changing, by expanding, right? Let's say if you want a physical, a strong physical body, you have to, you know, get up and do those abs. The abs are not just going to appear. You know, if you just sit and watch TV and eat, chances are physically you're going to be weak. So you actually have to challenge the body, get the heart rate going to get a stronger physical body. You have to actually challenge yourself. So that's what my goal in life is to take. No, you don't have to let your baby just cry. He's going to have to cry. She's going to have to cry just enough so they can try. I don't like to let babies, like, that's why my 3-minute rule comes in. Okay, you let them cry for 3 minutes. If within 3 minutes, they're so sidetracked, you know, they're so upset that they're not learning anything, go in. Bring them from that, you know, very emotional place to a place where, okay, I got to hold myself. I can try again. Because that's life. You have to be able to try and try and try and try again until you figure it out. The beauty of sleep is that if you step away and allow them to try, you're going to notice that pretty quickly they will learn. Why? Because sleep is a primary need. So I want to change sleep training is letting your baby cry it out to sleep training is letting your baby try it out. Let me try. It's giving them room to grow their own abilities. You know, once you give in, so it's it easy? No. It's uncomfortable? Yes. It's like running a mile. It's like at the end of the mile, like you're tired, but your heart is happy. Your body's happy. And that's where I want parents to feel the challenge just enough so when sleep gets compromised by illness, traveling, where you're like, oh my gosh, the baby's waking up in the middle of the night, I kind of have to remind him of the boundaries, is not something painful. It's something that they welcome it because they know it works. So, but just like you mentioned before, we have a whole society that divide us, okay, that say, no, you have to wear your baby. No, you have to put your baby in letting him cry. You're feeding your baby too much. You're not feeding your baby enough. You know, like, so it's, you're cuddling your baby and, oh my gosh, you're damaging your baby. So parents are pulled in all different opposite directions, you know. And so we have an overload of information. We have an overload of misinformation. We, like you said, we have unattainable expectations, and nobody's harder on themselves than the parents. Why? Because this is the one job they don't want to fail. They want their baby to be happy. So nobody questions them more than they question themselves. So what I try to tell them is like, welcome every suggestion as suggestions. And then decide what is it that works for you with the information you get. But with the information you get, aside from sleep training, look at the medical community and see what's best for your baby when it comes to sleep. Why is it sleep so important? You know, look at your own need for sleep to understand that it's like, okay, this is one aspect of child raising that I have to have under control because this benefits the whole family. Parenting is the most difficult thing anyone can do. And you're going to do a lot of things that are right. And you're going to do a lot of things that are wrong. Because it's a learning experience for both subjects. For the baby and for the parent. Like you said, because I have, as you observe your grandchild, you know, there is those urges and tendencies that you have created over, you know, many, many years that you actually have to battle to hold it back if you have a different goal, you know. So it's a good independent sleeper will not happen overnight. It's a conscious decision that you make it every day to try again until you see the results. And once you see the results, they're very empowering. And hopefully that they will be empowering enough that you keep making that same decision of healthy behavior throughout your child's raising years and throughout your own life. Because good sleeping habits need to be practiced every day throughout your whole life.
Yeah, I like that saying you had in there, don't cry it out, try it out. And I think that reflects well on your book and the message you had. So babies are brought into an existing family unit, whether it's just one or several other family members. How should the adaptation between the newborn and the existing family unit be handled?
Well, usually there is that period that, you know, everybody has to adjust. But unfortunately, the way, you know, sometimes it happens in our society, especially in the U.S., is that the baby, because it's the brand new member of the family, becomes the center of attention. And in reality, all the baby is a reminder that what it can be. Okay, so I think it's actually a learning period where it's like, okay, a new member is coming, which will make you reevaluate everything. But the baby is the most malleable one. So I like the family to be seen as a unit where everybody counts equally. Okay, where parents are in charge. Why? Because they're the most experienced, hopefully, in the unit, and they have access to information that will enable them to make the absolute best call when it comes to their children and the way they live. Okay, so I always tell parents, because you are in that position of authority, of the person in charge, doesn't mean you have all the answers. Nobody does. You know, like you get a general, he doesn't have all the answers for the soldiers. He too is learning as he goes. So all you can do is have the absolute best intentions and then, you know, let's say, okay, what works for all of us? So that's why I tell parents, you know, after that period of, okay, the mother had time to heal from, you know, pregnancy and childbirth. The baby has time to adjust to the new environment. Now it's time to decide where we're going from here. What works best for a family? And for this family, not for all the other families in the neighborhood, you don't have to live their lives. You have to live your life. So everything should come in place. Okay, what's the best time when mom and dad work, when we are home, you know, and once you put all that in paper and say, okay, how can we incorporate the baby and in a routine that is conducive to his optimal development and health, and for hours, because everybody counts equally, and then find that rhythm that benefits everybody. One of the many questions that I get is like, you know, I think the baby likes, warm. Oh, but we really used to cold. So it's like, okay, the baby, you know, put an extra layer on the baby, and the baby will adjust to the temperature that both of you find is best. Because that's how a family happens. You get two individuals that were raised very differently, you know, different backgrounds, and they fall in love and they decide to get married. So there is that first adjustment period. Okay, we got married. I come from a background. You come from your background. Let's compromise and find our own individual rhythm when it comes to couple and family. Now we bring into the mix children. These children are going to be exposed to the unique place, which is the compromising place between what I knew from my family, what you knew from your family. Now we began a brand new family. And we decided by compromising that we're going to do a little bit your way and a little bit my way. That becomes our way. And those children are going to come, and they're not going to learn mommy's way or daddy's way. They're going to learn their way, which is a compromise between what both of them knew before marriage. And that's society. That's the first societal experiment there is. So you're going to equip your baby the best they can until they become adults and they meet somebody else and they go on to find their own way. Each family is unique. And you know, you're a parent of more than one child. You're going to teach the same lesson to, let's say, in my case, I have five children. And they all took the lesson a little bit differently. Why? Because they are unique individuals themselves. So, and that's what is the fascinating, wonderful privilege of raising, you know, individuals, different kids, and all you can do is the best you can. That's where I tell parents, be compassionate towards your children and be compassionate towards yourself. Always remember, you get to do it all over again tomorrow. Tomorrow, you know, make it to the end of the day, reset, and then start again tomorrow. And but always keep in mind, the baby is the easiest one to adjust. So don't think, oh, I can't expect him to learn that. It's easier for him to learn than it is for you to learn. And trust me, you're going to learn a lot in this experience. So it's going to be a win-win in my view.
You may be listening to this podcast on your computer, tablet, or phone through our website or as an MP3 file. But there's a much more convenient method, a podcast app. Sign up today on your favorite podcast app and never miss an episode. Or visit us at sleeptohealthy.com for simple instructions on how to find an app and subscribe to the podcast. Yeah, and you mentioned earlier on that, you know, humans have some unique capabilities, and I think one of them is resilience, that even when we make mistakes, yes, oftentimes others bounce back, not only bounce back from it, but actually can be, even be better people as a result of something we might even have done wrong as a parent. And you break the 12-hour sleep program into four elements. The first is daytime feeding. The second, daytime naps. Third is rituals for going to sleep. And the fourth is the actual sleeping time. So I'd like to start with the daytime feeding. What are your general guidelines for daytime feeding? And how does that relate to night and staying in bed for 12 hours straight?
Okay. When a baby comes from the hospital or firstborn, you want the number one, the most important thing is to make sure the baby gains weight so it can survive on the new environment. A baby comes from a perfect environment in a mother's womb where everything is balanced to perfection. Now, when the baby's born, the baby needs to adjust, learn how to eat, learn how to process the food, and then, you know, learn to adjust to the new environment. And that is our number one goal. That's where the day feeding step comes in. Your baby will come home from the hospital on a schedule or somewhat of a schedule if you're nursing or if you're bottle feeding. The idea of a schedule is to feed your baby and also give your baby the opportunity to process that food. Once your baby, as your baby grow and start gaining weight, what you're going to notice is naturally they're going to start eating bigger amounts, which will eventually take you to a place where you have, you know, a more set periods of not eating, which is the time for processing food clear in your schedule. At this place, the reason why I wanted to address daytime feeding, because you do want to meet that nutritional need, but what you want to try is not to fall on the in a place where your baby is snacking, so eating small amounts of food throughout the day and night. So because that, you know, that long term, that's unsustainable, and your baby will get used to that. You know, a lot of parents find themselves in a place where, oh, my baby is, eats every hour and a half, 2 hours, and you can go through in that kind of schedule for a period of time, but not for the long haul. So that's where we kind of give a roadmap where parents have the goal to actually have a feeding and then time enough to digest, where the digest system has time to process it and without having to be overloaded or constantly working. Okay. And to give the baby the opportunity to be, you know, to become a healthy eater, where the baby actually is given the opportunity to feel hungry, because, you know, hunger triggers willingness to try new things. And guess what? In 6 months, you're going to have to introduce new foods with different textures, you know, but a parent of a 4 months is not think for a week old is not thinking about what's going to happen 6 months down the road. So as somebody that has experience with babies, that's what I wanted. I wanted to make sure they understand the importance of meeting the nutritional needs that the baby has to have. That's what I've learned in my experience. Okay, a baby needs to be eating a certain amount of food, calories, nutrients in a 24-hour period before we see that shift and the kick in of the circadian rhythm where your baby sleeps longer and stays awake more during the day. That really defines, okay, it's time to encourage that kind of behavior. So there's no blurred lines. When it's time to sleep, it's time to sleep. When it's time to be awake, it's time to be awake. So our book, you know, tries to emphasize that you need to give your baby time to process the food. You need to wake your baby during the day to eat. You don't wake a sleeping baby at night to eat, but you do want to wake a baby that's sleeping to eat at the right time during the day. Why? Because long term, that's what's most beneficial for optimal health for your baby. Then what you, the next step then is the naps. You want to make sure, because you're trying to encourage the difference between daytime and nighttime. So daytime is very active, where you want to kind of put the structure in place where a parent learns how to take the lead and understand, okay, during the day we have activities, you know, life is going on. There is, the dog is barking outside. There's a lot of, you know, things going on. And then, you know, okay, now it's time to, now things quiet down. You almost like you're plowing the field to put in the seed, you know, so it's like you're putting foundation to build, you know, a good structure as you go on. And that's the same idea behind nighttime routine, the ritual. The nighttime routine are cues that you want to put in place, not as much for the four-week-old. You're doing that so you get into the habit. Remember, human beings are creatures of habit. You get in the habit of doing that every night. So by the time your baby's six, nine, a year old, he knows, okay, when we go up and we take a bath and mom start talking to me like this and the lullaby is playing, when I read the book, I know what's coming. So that brings predictability for the baby, you know, as well as transitioned, you know, from an active environment to a quiet, calm, spa-like environment that is conducive to good sleep. And that changes from one child, you know, or a 4 month and a year and a half, or two children, you know, like, so we always, throughout our lives, from a baby to a 9-year-old, we have to have rituals for sleep. Where, okay, every, and you have to do it consistently until your body adapts and gets used to it. So you have to have a routine that contains quiet time, slow time, you know, soothing sounds that are, you know, that quiets our mind into a place of relaxation where we surrender to the inevitable, where we surrender to what's best for us, which is the sleep. And it takes practice, especially if you are a parent or somebody like me that, you know, you get accustomed to do things a way that is ultimately not good for you, you know, that will have eventual consequences that they're not good for your overall health. But that's where it's the beginning of a good habit that hopefully can be encouraged and reinforced throughout their whole lives, because, you know, because it's beneficial for short-term health and long-term health. Now, sleeping through the night is, like I said, you know, I wish I could take all the credit, but it's like, as a species, we sleep at night, independent of our age, independent of our age, our race, our gender, our nationalities. Human beings sleep at night. That's what we are supposed to do as a species. And just like walking and talking is something that nobody can do it for us. We have to learn how to do it for ourselves. And the sooner we understand that, I think the more parents will embrace the independent sleep approach. You know, like, okay, I'm going to allow my baby to develop his own abilities to find that happy place. You know, like when you go to bed and you go to that one side that's like, oh, this is so comfortable. That happy place, nobody can find it for you but you, as well as you can for yourself. So it's hoping that parents understand that the more you do it for your baby, the more you're getting in the way of what ultimately you want, is that your baby finds happiness lies within us, not outside of us. Nobody can feel that place within us, happiness. And we spend a lifetime learning that, you know. So when you start at that very young age, believing that, okay, and it starts like, oh, it's just a baby, you know, what does he know? Even a sequoia, you know, huge tree, it starts from a little seed. That's your baby. And it's always like, okay, if you plant a sequoia, no matter how the potential, if you put it in a pot that is too small for its root, how far its root can grow, you're going to stunt the progress. You're going to stunt the growth. And that you have to allow your baby enough room, age appropriately, you know, but enough room so they can develop their own abilities. That will result on happier, more fulfilled human beings. So it's a big job. It's a big job, and it's a job of practice every day. You do the best you can. Some days you're going to get it very right. Some days not so good. But guess what? Tomorrow you get to try again. As long as you keep the eye on the goal, which is, okay, the more I do for my baby, the more I hinder him from finding his own abilities to find himself. The more I expose him to the opportunity to try, the greater the possibility that he will figure this out with my, you know, with my support.
So could you be a bit more specific about the response to resistance by the child? I guess what I mean by that is, how you respond when the child is crying, and especially, you know, how you use that to actually teach them or help them to learn how to get themselves back to sleep.
Yes. Okay. So part of our plan, I narrowed down to the 3-minute rule and the 15-minute rule. The 3-minute rule is mostly about teaching them how to sleep. Okay. And what that is, that is a number that I arrived to. Okay. How the minimal amount possible that is tolerable by the average mom to hear their baby cry. It's a long 3 minutes. So, okay, Susie, I have my nighttime routine. I finish, bath, book, lullabies, feeding. My baby's, what do I do now? You place your baby in the crib and you walk away. Your walking away is you giving your baby the opportunity to try. You walk away. You're now outside of the nursery with a monitor or just with your ears. You're going to monitor. Your baby's going to cry. Now, the cry, because crying is their way of communicating, you want to monitor the emotional cry, the cry that is loud enough to make you uncomfortable. And that place, I call the redlining. When it's, and your monitor is red, you stay in that place for 3 minutes, which is going to be a long 3 minutes for a mother and a child. Okay. If within those 3 minutes, the baby does not manage to calm down, that's when you step in. And because sleep training is a learning experience, but sometimes because their emotions are not fully developed yet, babies can get off track, I'm too upset to learn anything. And that's what you don't want. So that's where the 3-minute rule comes in. So you go in and your job is to bring your baby from that, very emotional place, to, okay, I got a hold of myself. Once they get a hold of themselves, and you can pick them up, you can pat them, your job going in is twofold. One, to bring your baby from a place where they're not learning anything to a place where they're learning, and to reset the baby. Because, your baby's going to kick, they're going to get into a corner, or they're going to get, sideways. So you kind of put them back in a position that's like, okay, they're well situated. You check the diaper, see if they leaked, if they have a poopy diaper. You dry their tears, clean their noses. You're literally resetting the baby to a place they have a better chance to calm themselves. Twofold. Reset the baby, calm the baby. Once the baby's calm enough to try again, you walk away. And then you monitor the crying. And then you repeat from the moment they go to sleep until the next scheduled feeding and so forth. Why? Because you are first trying to teach your baby how to sleep, between the periods of eating. Now, the resistance that you mentioned, they will appear only when bad habits or different habits are set in place. So the older your child, where you yourself, by the time, let's say, your baby 6 months or a year old, you see that bad habits or habits that are not conducive to good independent sleep has set in, that's the resistance. The resistance is not your baby's inability to do it. The resistance is that your baby think it should be done differently. Wait a minute, I was sleeping on top of you and now you want me to sleep in the crib? If you do the sleep training before 12 weeks, your baby does not have the rational understanding of anything else. So what your baby does is naturally fall into the rhythm that you're trying to put your baby in. So the sooner you do it, anything before 16 weeks is much easier than if you do older, where there are other, sleep consultant or specialists that think it should be done older. I found in my experience, the older the child is, the more the habits that have been reinforced through a period of time, they become set, and so the harder it becomes to break those habits. You know, old habits die hard. And that's a true statement. So it's like, okay, so the longer you wait, the more difficult it's going to be. But I always encourage parents to find what works for them, as long as they have that understanding. As long as you keep responding this way, the longer you go responding this way, that's the expectations that is going to be built with your child. Once you change and you understand, okay, this is not working for him or for us, then and you're ready to enforce the changes as long as necessary for them to become the new rule. Parents make the rules, they bend the rules, they break the rules as they see fit. That's what I believe in.
That reminds me of our episode 9, where we talked about intensive sleep retraining. And it's kind of the same thing as you're talking about for a baby, but for adults, where you can basically retrain yourself after how to go to sleep if you've had a lifetime or decades or years of bad habits that has prevented that. But as we near the end, I have a fun but serious challenge for you. In my fantasy world, I'm a YouTube wizard who is giving you unlimited resources to produce a 30-second video with a guaranteed minimum audience of 10 million views. Tell us what you would put in that video and why.
I would put in that video the importance, the actual facts in, of researches that have been done about the benefits of sleep. And, you know, as bullet points, these are the facts. This is what we know. You know, the medical community has found out as far as sleep. And then I would try, like I said, to very quickly disassemble that myth that sleep training equals crying it out. You know, sleep training is giving your baby the opportunity to try. Once we connect those two facts, you know, sleep training is giving your baby the opportunity to try something that they are equipped to learn. Just like we are equipped to walk and talk, but we have to develop those abilities. The same thing applies to sleep. So that's the connection in our society that needs to be done, that needs to be encouraged, is I think all of us, with you, with your blogs and podcasts, and is educating people of the importance of sleep in overall health, and especially when it comes to children, because everyone, parents, grandparents, everybody loves babies, and they want what's best for babies. I just believe that there is part of society that is a little bit misguided with, and that misinformation will lead to ultimately to a future that's not beneficial for overall health, physical, emotional, and intellectual health of babies overall. So for a better, happier generation ahead of us, I think we need to start taking sleep a little bit more seriously.
Yes, and I think that is happening in the adult population, and I'm sure it, with time it's going to trickle down more and more into our children and to our babies as well. And as we wrap up, what's one thing that our listeners could do today to improve their baby's sleep tonight so they could both feel and function better tomorrow?
I would tell them, think of going to sleep as you going to a spa. Put your baby in an environment that is conducive to sleep, dark, cool, safe, calm. Feed your baby. Once your baby is nice and relaxed, put the baby down and walk away. Set a plan that you can follow through, whether it be, okay, I'm going to practice allowing him to try for an hour, 2 hours, whatever that is, something. And then tomorrow, you try again. Just by allowing yourself and your baby a little bit of practice, you're going to see improvement. It is in the positive results that you're going to get from that small change that's going to empower you to go to the next level, which is to, you know, expect a little bit more and a little bit more. Baby steps. That's what I tell parents. Take one baby step that would challenge you a little bit and your baby a little bit, and the results will wow you.
Thank you. And where should people go to learn about you and the resources you have available?
They can go to my website, thebabycoach.com. You will have a list of our services that are available all around the United States, all around the world, actually. They can go to our Facebook page, Susie Giordano, The Baby Coach, or our Instagram at The Baby Coach Official. We try to keep an open line of communication with all the parents that use our book or that have more questions, and we try to help as many people as we can. We're always looking for new ways to, you know, keep the information flowing, keep the talk going. So, you know, we become this movement, like you said, that we benefit from the trickle down of people understanding the benefits and the importance of sleep.
And as always, we will have the link to Susie's website, Facebook, Instagram, and the books in the show notes at sleeptohealthy.com. Susie, your book reminded me of a standard operating procedure that I would have written as an engineer for my staff. It was pragmatic, like a recipe, direct and to the point. Even the audio version is only about 2.5 hours long. Listen. And I can't imagine a better return on investment for caregivers of young children than the time invested in creating good sleep habits for their children. Susie, on behalf of our listeners, thank you for being our much-needed baby sleep advisor on this episode of the Sleep to Healthy podcast.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about my favorite subject. I greatly appreciate it.
Let's summarize some of the key points Susie made today. The first is the myth of sleep training. Your resistance to sleep training will depend a lot on your parenting style. If you take a more hands-off approach when parenting and are uncomfortable with forcing expectations onto your child, then you might struggle with implementation. It can seem unnatural to struggle against the child's resistance to training. But if you can overcome this tendency of yours, then sleep training can benefit everyone. The second is that sleep training is an around-the-clock event. It includes daytime feeding and daytime naps and bedtime rituals, as well as middle-of-the-nighttime responses. It is not just what you do after you put the child to sleep. The third is the 3-minute rule. One of the most distressing aspects of sleep training is when the baby is alone, in the dark, and crying. Nobody likes that. Maybe you settle on 2 minutes or 4 minutes, but regardless, setting up predetermined and age-appropriate boundaries can reduce much of the stress. And the fourth, which is both hopeful and important, is that sleep training isn't just for babies. Even if your child is older, they can still learn to sleep through the night. You must expect more resistance and be more persistent and adapt the techniques to the age of the child, but it is doable. As always, you can find detailed interview notes with Susie Giordano, along with all the links at sleeptohealthy.com. This concludes our episode for today. Another episode related to today's topic is episode 9 with Michael Schwartz, titled Sleep on Demand, where he talks about sleep training for adults. Listening to it might make sleep training for babies seem a little more reasonable. Thank you for keeping me company today. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Sleep to Healthy podcast. This podcast is not a substitute for advice from a qualified healthcare professional. The sole purpose of this podcast is to educate and entertain. As we do not know your particulars, we cannot and do not provide professional or medical advice or services. We strongly encourage you to consult a healthcare professional before incorporating any ideas in this podcast. Listeners who use the information in this podcast do so at their own risk. The guests on this podcast express their own opinions, beliefs, and conclusions, which is neither supported nor opposed by the podcast and host. The podcast does not fact check information provided.